Welcome to Unit 12C, where our focus will be on several quality improvement tools that are used often in healthcare and may prove helpful in learning from mistakes. There are two quality improvement tools that are used in all organizations accredited by the Joint Commission. They are known as mantras of modern risk management because they have the power to transform patient safety through learning. Both are systematic and team-based. One is called RCA, or root cause analysis, and it looks to the past to learn from mistakes. The second, failure mode effects analysis, or FMEA, takes the opposite approach and looks to the future by anticipating errors and putting processes in place to either prevent or mitigate potential harm. Root cause analysis is a structured problem-solving process used to identify the causal or contributing factors underlying adverse events. In a methodical way, team members consider all possible causes of events, both human and system factors, as potential contributors to the event, rather than attributing the event to the first cause they examine. The premise underlying RCA is that we can learn from our mistakes and from the mistakes of others. According to the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, the single most important product of an RCA is the detailed account of the events that led up to the incident. The beauty of the RCA is that the tool is based on the premise that one can learn from one's mistakes. Therefore, although the approach is predominantly retrospective, in that we're trying to find out what went wrong in something that really occurred, changes as a result of an RCA benefit from the prospective analysis of what could go wrong if we institute this fix. Human factors to take into consideration include knowledge, skill, and abilities of those involved in the event, including adequacy of training. Procedural factors include the complexity of the procedure itself and any dependencies that exist. For example, if use of a central line safety checklist is required, but the lists are paper-based and cannot be found at the time they are needed, then this could have led to an adverse event under review. Use of a central line cart that is stocked with checklists, or the availability of an electronic checklist at the point of care, would be appropriate interventions. Defects or failures in equipment or facilities, work conditions, and communication are also examined. RCA, or root cause analysis, is used whenever something really bad happens and we want to understand why, so that we can prevent a similar event from occurring in the future. We know that if we dissect the error by developing a chronological description of the who, the what, when, where, and how of the situation, we can find out the probable cause and put something in place to prevent the event from occurring again. RCA is based on the belief that we can learn from our mistakes. Let's take a practical example from everyday life. I taught my 17-year-old daughter how to do laundry in anticipation of her living in a college dormitory. She returned home one weekend with a total body rash and oily clothes. After taking her to the dermatologist and getting her prescriptions filled, I wanted to try to uncover what led to this situation. Obviously, something happened between the time my daughter lived at home and practiced doing laundry successfully and the time she returned in misery. She left for school with clear skin, a bottle of unscented Tide, and a suitcase filled with 5 pairs of jeans and a multitude of tops. What would we do in order to get to the root cause of this problem? The answer, an RCA. Root cause analyses are very structured. First, we need to describe what happened. My daughter arrived home with a total body rash and oily jeans in her suitcase. Next, we have to look at all areas that may have affected the problem. We came up with her dorm's laundry facilities, our home laundry facilities, and how each of these were used by my daughter. In this case, the team we assembled included my daughter and me, as well as her dermatologist. We can draw a diagram of the steps that I had taught my daughter to use when doing laundry. Here, it's important to look at the conditions in my home with respect to my laundry room. Next, my daughter could draw a diagram about how she actually did laundry in my home, and finally, we could draw a diagram of the steps she took in the dorm. Again, we needed to look at the dorm's laundry facilities. We found out that the dorm washing machine was much smaller than my home machine, was a front loader versus a top loader, required much less detergent and a different concentration of detergent, had only a single rinse cycle, while my machine has an automatic double rinse cycle. My daughter followed my instructions to the letter. Unfortunately, the equipment was different, and she did not know enough to alter her procedure in response to these differences. Her clothes retained soap, rubbed against her skin, and caused the rash. So, what plans could we make? Definitely use less soap, and use the kind that is made for use in top loaders. Set the rinse cycle so that the clothes could be double rinsed. Of course, I don't live at the dorm, so the responsibility belongs to my daughter. The new plan has to happen as soon as she returns to school. I'll know if the plan was effective when she reports her skin status and when I check out her clothes on her next visit home. Now that we've had a practical example, let's talk about a healthcare example that you may encounter as an HIT professional. Mrs. A received blood in the emergency room. Within 15 minutes, she experienced a bad reaction. Her nurse realized that she had received blood intended for another patient. Mrs. A was transferred to the intensive care unit to be stabilized. The emergency department staff wanted to know how this could have happened, so they assembled a team to identify possible causes. As you can see, the ramifications of patient identification errors can be catastrophic in the healthcare setting. It's essential that the healthcare team work together to understand the root causes of errors such as these so that similar events can be decreased in the future. So let's walk through the steps of an RCA for this event. As soon as clinical leaders became aware of the event, they would discuss what happened. Since this is a very serious event, they would decide to do a root cause analysis. To start, they would identify the affected areas or services. In this case, clinicians and blood transfusion services, as well as quality improvement staff or the risk manager, would be selected to join the RCA team. In addition, since HIT has shown promise in helping to prevent patient identification errors, as an HIT professional, you might be requested to contribute to this analysis. Early on, the team will take a deep dive into the details of the event. They will develop flow charts on how the blood product transfusion patient identification process was designed, how it's usually done in this particular emergency department, and how it was done on the day that this event occurred. Invariably, we would find that these three workflow processes differ in some way or another. The team might uncover flawed processes for patient identification. they might also find something wrong with the patient verification process against the blood product. They may uncover that inadequate staffing levels led to workarounds because nurses were too busy to do the usual safety checks. Or that nurses who were managing the blood transfusion were not fully trained in the facility's blood product transfusion practices. The team may find several root causes. Here we can learn lessons from the aviation industry. We can increase the potential for success by prioritizing each cause and selecting interventions based on their ability to prevent future harm, as well as our ability to successfully implement these interventions given our available resources. Luckily, the team thought to add you, an HIT professional. You might point out the merits of barcode technology for blood product verification. This technology interfaces with both the electronic health record and the transfusion medicine information system. You might be assigned responsibility and a timeline to develop a project plan. As a team, you would all determine a measurement strategy that would show that you have improved the ability to accurately identify patients who receive blood transfusions. As you can see, this is a very effective strategy for learning from our mistakes. But we don't have to wait for mistakes to happen before we take action. There are other quality improvement tools that anticipate events and try to either stop them from happening or minimize harm if they do happen. Failure mode effects analysis looks to the future in a prospective attempt to predict where errors could possibly potentially occur. An FMEA combines the likelihood of a particular process failure with an estimate of the relative impact of that error to produce a criticality index. By combining the probability of failure with the consequences of failure, this index allows for the prioritization of specific processes as quality improvement targets. During an FMEA, the team analyzes ways in which a process or a design can fail, why it might fail, and how it can be made safer or better. The FMEA is based on the premise that we do not have to wait for errors to happen. We can anticipate error and adverse events, and we can do things to reduce the risk of harm. Before I had children, I invited one of my high school friends and her family, including a toddler, to dinner. I was worried that her toddler would somehow manage to hurt himself in my house, which was designed for a childless couple. You can imagine that I found myself in the middle of a rapid FMEA. Step one of an FMEA is to select a high-risk process, one that is known to have problems. Of course, even though we didn't have children at that point in time, my husband and I were both pediatric nurses and were well aware of the dangers an unfamiliar environment can pose for toddlers. We strategized as to the best defensive maneuvers. We thoughtfully diagrammed the process, starting from the point at which our guest entered our home. We asked questions about the degree of vigilance of the toddler's parents and tried to anticipate the outcomes in all cases. We looked for a worst-case scenario when the parents do not keep the toddler in their lap or don't monitor him as he toddles. And we put into a variety of well-known toddler-proof safety features, just in case. We looked at our living space and conducted a hazard analysis. We asked ourselves, how likely is it that the toddler could fall down the stairs? And if he fell down the stairs, how catastrophic would it be? How likely is it that the toddler could reach the Lennox vase and topple it? If it falls over, how likely is it to shatter and injure the little angel? And so on. We would draw a hazard matrix and analyze the risk. So if the odds are high that he would fall down the stairs, which could have been catastrophic, then the hazard associated with the stairwell is 16. If the odds are remote that he could reach the Lennox vase, but the injury could be moderate if he did, then the associated hazard would be 2. We might choose to put preventive measures in place for the stairwell, but not to do anything about the vase. Let's look at a healthcare example. After reading several articles about laboratory specimen errors that result in lab tests being done on the wrong patient, doctors at a community office practice decide to examine the potential for this problem to happen in their office laboratory. Let's walk through the steps of an FMEA. Step 1 is to select a high-risk process. In this instance, it's patient identification, but could be any process that affects large numbers of patients, carries a high risk for patients, or has known process problems identified by other organizations. Here, the provider members of this group practice are alerted to a high-risk process by reading articles written by other doctors. They wonder about the risk of this particular problem occurring in their office lab and decide to do a failure mode effects analysis. They also wonder whether there is an IT solution that would minimize the risk of laboratory patient misidentification errors in their practice. While assembling the team, you want to include people who are closest to the issue involved, those who are critical to implementing potential changes. You want to have a respected, credible leader, someone with decision-making authority, and people with diverse knowledge bases. So, our hypothetical provider group would ask you, as an HIT professional, to participate in this FMEA. They also include the lab supervisor, an office nurse, and 2 lab technicians. Together, they diagram the process and look for ways in which the process could potentially fail. They identify 3 places that the process could fail. There could be a problem with the label printing. The phlebotomist could forget to ask the patient to state his name and birth date. Or the phlebotomist could lead the patient to affirm an incorrect identity by phrasing the question to include the incorrect name. Mr. Jones, right? Finally, the phlebotomist could fail to check the patient's lab requisition label with the patient's response. During the hazard analysis, the team may find that most often phlebotomists forget to request the patient's name and birth date. This could lead to inappropriate or missed lab draws. On your advice, they decide to investigate barcode technology as a method to increase the safety of the laboratory specimen identification process in their office lab. In summary, both RCA and FMEA are powerful quality improvement tools that can assist teams in understanding errors and implementing improvement actions. RCA looks to past errors for answers, while FMEA anticipates error. RCA asks the question, how, why, and who? FMEA asks, what if? RCA is predominantly a retrospective dissecting of events that have occurred, while FMEA is a prospective, proactive anticipation of error that could occur in the future. RCA looks for causes and contributors. FMEA looks for possible failure modes. While RCA is subject to hindsight bias, this is not the case with FMEA. In summary, root cause analysis is an effective QI tool that looks to the past for the cause of adverse events and seeks to prevent these causes from resurfacing in the future. Failure mode effects analysis is another equally effective QI tool that uses a different approach. It anticipates adverse events, conducts a hazard analysis, and looks to the future to prevent failure modes with the highest criticality. The ability to use flow diagrams is an important skill for professionals involved in these processes. With an understanding of QI tools such as RCA and FMEA, health IT professionals can be key contributors to improvement efforts. HIT professionals have a clear role in ensuring patient safety. Will you help to ensure a safer healthcare system so that people like Josie are not inadvertently harmed by the care that is intended to help them? Both of these methodologies use a process analysis tool called flow charting. Flow diagrams, also known as flow charts, are used very frequently by HIT teams for analyzing processes. Flow diagrams allow team members to visualize a process in the order that things occur. They can also look at points during which materials or services enter and leave the process, also known as inputs and outputs, where decisions must be made, who is involved in those decisions, and how much time people have for each step of the process. Flow diagrams can also include process measurements. Flow charting is a very useful tool that helps you to understand how a process is done, study a process for improvement, communicate to others how a process is done. It improves communication between people involved with the same process. It's useful for documenting a process, for planning a project, and for evaluating a process. The rectangle is the most frequently used symbol in flow charting and denotes an operation or action step. When this is a formally defined sub-process, such as something defined by policy, the rectangle has left and right borders. A triangle denotes a decision point. From here, the flow goes to more than one option. There can be any number of options, but only one choice. There are also basic symbols for documents and multiple documents, which represents reports that are inputs or outputs of the process. The parallelogram is the data or input-output symbol, which represents data that are available for input or data that result from the process, such as a database. The terminator symbol can be used for both the start and the stop point in a process. By the end of this unit, you'll be able to apply QI tools to the analysis of HIT errors.